us. Should I do this again?
No.
In the middle of a street, us. In the middle of a...
I think that that's the less good Our House song. I think the better Our House song is. Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy because of you.
What is this?
What the hell? Crosby, Stills, Nash, and whatever the hell?
You couldn't tell by my face I didn't know that song.
You have certainly heard it.
I don't know that song. Crosby, Stills?
Nash and Young, I think.
I'm playing up. Investigative journalism.
Yeah, I can't believe you couldn't tell from me singing, though.
Well, I don't think I've heard it. I am now...
Now you're confirming.
Confirming that I haven't heard it.
Well, I've just blessed you. This is one of the most lovely songs ever.
This is very lovely. Wait a second.
Yeah,
Crosby, Stills, and Nash, you're kind of onto something with this.
I know.
You know what? Madness be damned.
Madness be damned.
Our house belongs to Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
And Young, don't you forget.
And Young. Sorry, this YouTube video, the channel that uploaded it, they axed Young. They said Young's out of the group.
God knows. I actually really don't know. I might be making that shit up.
No, you're correct. The name of the channel is Crosby, Stills, and Nash. But the description of the video says Our House, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. So I imagine, and this is pure conjecture because I haven't actually researched anything. I'd imagine Young probably left the group since this was recorded in 1970. Yeah. And so Crosby, Stills, and Nash said, we're not putting Young's traitorous name on our YouTube channel. However, we do have to credit Young in the song Our House because they did record it.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. And this is Behind the Music with Lena and Ian.
Recovering Gleek presents
Slay! A queer Buffy podcast.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lena.
My name is Ian.
And welcome to Slay! A queer Buffy podcast. Don't get it twisted.
Not the straight Buffy podcast.
No, we're queer.
A dime a dozen now. No, every heterosexual's got an opinion on the Slayer all of a sudden.
Which is like, oh my God, you guys. Back off. It's not for you. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. You're straight and you like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah, I assumed it's a huge cliche.
Yeah.
We're trying to bring something different to the table.
No, I know. Oh my God, welcome you guys. We're here, we're queer. We're here to talk about our bad daddy, Angel. No, I'm just kidding. But what's my line
for
two?
That was kinky as hell.
Oh my God.
The fact that she was like bad daddy and then he was like, hey Spike, let me tell you how to fuck your girlfriend.
No.
That was crazy.
And I'm so glad we're bringing it up now. That was crazy. It also was like, wait, Challenger's Challenge, like three-way kiss.
Drew, I think you should get these two to kiss.
No. And I mean, come on.
Drew, I think you could do it.
They have.
I know they have.
Like, I don't need to be told. I saw the tension.
Okay, so here's the gag and here's the bag. Here's the gag and here's the bag. Might be new phrase. Wait,
I kind of
that's
like
fun.
That. Here's new
the
phrase gag and drop. Here's the bag. New phrase drop.
And this is true of all television shows. It's always like, what are pieces of lore that become very central to the show that clearly the writers did not have in mind at the beginning?
Yeah.
So they kind of stumbled onto. Like the most famous one in Buffy, not the most famous, but one of the most famous ones is Spike in Schoolhard says to Angel, you were my sire.
Yeah.
And then later, as we've already been introduced to, we find out that Angel is Drew's sire.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if this has been explicitly stated, but it's such a minor spoiler that I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
We then find out Drew turned Spike into a vampire. Angel did not turn him. Drew did.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been covered by the fact Joss Whedon has been asked about it in interviews. And he's like, well, sire just means like anyone previous in your lineage.
Oh,
and so like Angel is technically Spike's sire because he sired the woman who sired Spike. Oh. And to that I say,
granddad.
that sounds like you're just trying to cover your ass.
Exactly.
That sounds like you,
it sounds
did
like you
not...
didn't think about it. You wanted to like further your own plot.
Which like doesn't bother me. No. But I'm like, I just don't think in the very first episode where you had Spike and Drew that you had nailed down the specifics of this family tree.
Yeah.
And then once you nailed them down, you were like, fuck, we contradicted this. So let me just say that sire means anything. All this to say, in this episode, when Angel is like, Spike, I seem to remember that Drew likes a lot of foreplay. Mm-hmm. And Spike is like so gagged at the concept that Angel and Drusilla have fucked before. Mm-hmm. And this is like, this is once again, I'm like, moving forward, this is known canon by all parties. Like, it is common knowledge that Angel and Drusilla had a sexual relationship.
Yeah.
But in this episode, since it's the first time it's mentioned, the writers are like, and Spike is shocked by this information. Mm. Watching this show moving forward, no, he's always known that. Doesn't mean he likes to think about it. Doesn't mean it doesn't piss him off. But, like, it's not news to him.
Yeah. I definitely wasn't even watching it like he was shocked, but more just like, you know.
It was a twisting of the knife.
Yeah, it was a twisting of the knife. Because I just always, you know, I also, you know. Vampires, they'd be fucking each other.
Exactly.
Like, that's like the name of the game.
Name two vampires they've at least kissed.
No. Oh my God, of course. I mean, of course. Hello?
It's in the vampire handbook.
Oh, I know. I've read
it. You get it, and it says, you open it, and it says, hi, you're now dead.
Hi, kiss you all need, your friends now.
You need to drink blood to survive. Mm-hmm. And you need to kiss all your friends. Yeah. Those are the first two rules of
first
being a vampire.
First two rules. First two rules.
And
being
number
a vampire.
Three is don't go in the sun. Literally, kiss your friends is ranked as more important than avoiding sunlight.
And that's the thing, is it's so important. You
it's
have
so
to be
important.
Kissing your friends. Especially your sire. I mean, come on.
Especially your sire and your sire's sire.
Your grandsire. Let's
your
like grandsire. Let's party.
Let's
come
go.
On. I mean, you know. Oh my God. That scene, I literally was like, I was really watching this at like 10 years old and I'm reaping the consequences at 30.
And like the way that Angel is like shirtless and tied up the whole time, it is kinky as hell.
No, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
And like Drusilla like has fucking holy water like in her trunk. Dominatrix Drusilla.
Mm-hmm. Dominatrix Drusilla.
And I love this. I love this horribly. I think this is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I am reaping the consequences at 30. I watched this too young.
I'm watching too Buffy young. The Vampire Slayer too young. Whoa.
No. All this to say, can you believe that shit?
Yeah,
that's
it's crazy.
Fun. So fun. And... Welcome to our Queer Buffy podcast. We are happy to have you. Welcome to What's My Line Part 2. We're going to finish some conversations we had last week.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just get into it, shall we?
We literally recorded Part 1 yesterday, so there's not really any new updates in our lives.
I know, new updates.
I watched The Descent last night for the first time. Had a great time.
I love that.
If you want my more full thoughts, you can subscribe to our Patreon because I talk about it in our little pre-show.
And I have no updates. Nothing has happened.
Hey.
You know,
a regular Sunday night. Hell yeah.
Well, I mean, I watched Housewives. Oh my God.
Thrilling.
I have never watched that show before. I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast proper, but I have never watched Salt Lake Housewives before. And I regret it. I love it so much. It's also like... You know, Utah/Southwest people, you spend a lot of formative years in here in Utah, so you would get this. Mm-hmm. And you have like family from Utah as well.
Yeah.
Those are my aunts. Like, those are my aunties fighting. And I seriously, it feels like visiting family. Like, obviously, I don't understand their lifestyle in any way, and that's not a secret. But, like, Heather Gay, that woman, I'm certain we're cousins. Like, those women are my aunties. I know it. It's so fun because like Utah culture is so intense and weird, and it's really hard to explain to people who aren't from Utah or like, you know, have, you know, you get it because, you spent formative years here, but it's so weird and people always like have so many questions about it. And I think Salt Lake Housewives is such a cool amalgamation of Utah culture and also like rejection of it. And it is thrilling to behold. Mm-hmm. In a way, I think like Mormon Wives wishes, frankly. Mm-hmm. So if you want to watch a Utah TV show, I recommend Salt Lake Housewives. It's so fucking fun. Oh my God, it's so fun. If you ever decide to like become a Bravo gay, like I have decided to be.
Yeah, it's so much content. It really scares me.
Oh yeah, no, I totally hear you.
Yeah,
I mean, Salt Lake is only. I mean, I'm gonna say this, and it's gonna sound like a lot. It's only 6 seasons. I got through it in like 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh!
No, but it's worth it. No, it's the best television show of all time. I'm telling you.
Okay.
Do you want to hear some slacked?
Yes.
Not about Housewives, but about What's My Line Part 2.
If we have to, I guess.
Oh yeah, it's time for the slacks.
Okay, so I assume that a lot of the slacks were reserved for part 1 because I mean they're kind of
that makes sense.
They're sister episodes.
Also, some of the slacks I read last week. Mm-hmm. I then watched the episode and was like, that was misfiled. Like, yeah. I said last week that we're confirmed that there are 43 churches in Sunnydale. No, that's confirmed in this episode.
No, I noticed.
So I apologize for stealing your slides.
Oopsie. No. I'm going to clue you into a little secret. I don't care. Like, I care about the podcast. I care about sharing fun facts, but I do not feel like you've manspread into my slacks. Let me tell you. Okay. What's My Line Part 2 is the 10th episode of the second season of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the 22nd overall. 22! Written by our girl.
Hell yeah.
This is Mother. Put some respect on her name, Marty Noxon. And it was directed by David Semel. It was originally broadcast November 24th, 1997 on the WB network. Okay, so this is like probably the funnest fun fact of this. And by funnest, I mean like really, truly the only fun fact about this episode that I could find. So Marty Noxon has said that so after Oz's compliment about Willow's smile, all of their lines were ad-libbed. So like while like they're walking down the hallway.
The like and animal cracker pants conversation.
Yes, yes. All of that was ad-libbed. They just kind of let them have fun, which is so cute to like see this like natural chemistry that these two have and like the fun banter that they have. And this is all just natural. This is Allison Hannigan and Seth Green.
Seth Green.
Yeah, but it's the actor one. So we can say Seth Green. yeah. For Bruce Seth Green and Allison Hannigan. Isn't that so sweet? I thought that was so fun.
That is very sweet.
Shout out to Sophia Crawford. Sophia Crawford is Buffy's stunt double. I was going to say understudy. No? Stunt double. Different job. Buffy says to Kendra, back off Pink Ranger. And Sophia Crawford played the Pink Ranger for a long time. Like, not the actress, but
wait,
she was like, I know.
She was. Fun. Mm-hmm. She was the body with the mask on.
Exactly. That was Sophia Crawford. So shout out to her. Shout out to her. Okay. And obviously, Bianca Lawson, we met her last week. She plays Kendra. And a lot of people talk about this, but I don't know that like enough people are talking about this. So I'm going to send you a text really quick. You, Ian Allred.
Okay. You, the person listening, check your phone.
Check your phone. I've got your number. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about Bianca Lawson. One of her main things is this woman has played a teenager on television for more than 20 years. And let me go that down the line with you. So, yeah.
This is it will be in the carousel today for the podcast. Yeah.
So, she, and I did not make this picture. I found this on like Reddit or something. So, Bianca Lawson was born the 20th of March, 1979 in Los Angeles, California. She's a Nepo baby. Did you know? I did not know. And
I did not.
She is stepsisters with Beyonce and Solange Knowles.
Oh my gosh.
I know this, but that's just fun. But that doesn't have anything to do with what's going on. But this woman has played a teenager for more than 20 years. In Saved by the Bell, she was 14. She played like a 16-year-old. In Sister, Sister, it was 1996. She was 17. In Buffy, she's 18 in these episodes. In Dawson's Creek, she's 22. In Vampire Diaries from 2009 to 2011, she is 30 years old. In American Horror Story, she plays another teenager, 32. Pretty Little Liars, she plays another teenager. She's 31. That was a year before. Or, whoa, I did the math wrong. What the hell? I think I did the math wrong. I think in American Horror Story, she's 31. Pretty Little Liars, she's 32. Teen Wolf, she's 33. And then Witches of West End, which I think is the last thing that she played a teenager in, she was 35. And woman has looked, and honestly, today, I think she's like 47, if I'm not mistaken, today. She does not age at all. Like, this is a vampire. And, like, obviously, she's aged, but, like, she looks, like, no, she looks as incredible. Young. Yeah, no. And I bet the only reason, so Witches of West End was in, like, 2015. I think the only reason she stopped playing teenagers is because she probably didn't want to anymore. And not because she couldn't, because this woman, she does not age. And people talk about this, but, like, I have to shout this out because, you know, she's professional teenager on television. No, she's like
crazy.
Some people play a cop on TV. She plays a teenager on TV in her mid-30s. Like, and especially like Pretty Little Liars, like all of the people in that show were like 21 and under, and she's like over here like 33 years old. Isn't that
she's like, I remember being your age and doing Buffy the Vampire.
exactly. And I mean, like, she also started playing a 16-year-old at 14, so she's doing it, she did it before she was that age and well after. So I mean, this woman, I have love for this woman, and she is very talented. And I also think, like, it's probably hard to be in your, like, 30s and playing a teenager, but she does it so well.
Hey.
So shout out to Bianca Lawson. I really think this woman is so amazing and gorgeous, and she literally does not age. And that's kind of the end of my slacks. And obviously, no alternative titles because Ian already shared them. Should I just share them again?
Say
just for
everything
fun?
That I shared and just add a part two.
Okay, great. I will. What is my way? Armenian. What will I be? The Czech title. Visitors part two. Finnish and French. Oh, wait. French. They called it Kendra. So it's Kendra part two. Das Ritual in German. The Ritual. So it's just The Ritual again. They did not put a part two. What was it last week?
It was The Ritual.
It was The Ritual, so it's just two rituals.
Yeah.
Oh, Polish Slayer Part 2. What should I do? Second part in Portuguese Brazil.
I lied to you.
You lied.
Part 1 in Germany was The Rival, and then Part 2 is The Ritual.
The Rival,
Once
The Ritual.
Again,
wait, okay,
they
this
are
is
not
Gagatron.
Paying attention. They're not doing Part 1, Part 2. They said they're two separate pieces of art.
Yeah.
The
I
Rival,
kind of
the
love
ritual.
That.
Hey.
Because I feel like their sisters are not twins. They kind of go together.
Yeah.
A lot of the part twos of the same thing. But the German, I'm actually glad that we said it then, because that's really exciting.
Hey, The Rival, The Ritual.
The Rival, The Ritual.
The What's
so
My
welcome
Line
to
part
The Ritual. Kendra, part two.
I got a recap.
Okay, great.
Can you believe?
I'm ready to hear it.
Here we go. All right. Previously on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, although this time the recap of the episode said last week on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because it's a part two. Did you clock that?
Yeah, I did.
Anyway, previously on. Buffy and Kendra the Vampire Slayers butt heads. Turns out when Buffy briefly died in the season one finale, Kendra was called and has a much more by the book approach to slaying than Buffy's freewheeling resistant attitude. While the Order of Taraka continues to hunt Buffy down, Spike and Drew have kidnapped Angel to enact a ritual, bringing Drew back to full power. While hiding from the Order of Taraka, Xander and Cordy kiss! Kendra and Buffy team up to track down Angel, Spike, and Drew, and save Angel, but not before the ritual is enacted and Drew is healed. But Spike gets his ass whooped so bad, now he's injured. Kendra and Buffy part ways, having become friends and learning they are no longer alone.
Yay!
That's What's My Line part two. Hey, shout out.
It's
hard to do like a two-part episode. Most of the episodes, the story's open and shut. There were a lot of moving parts that were established last week, so there like wasn't a lot to talk about. And this episode is mostly just like Kendra and Buffy doing a buddy cop hunt down a Spike and Drew.
Yeah.
Anyways, What's My Line part two. Here we are.
Here we are.
What'd you think?
I love this episode. I love this episode. And I mean, I like What's My Line Part 1, but I feel like it's this one that shines for me. I like to meet Kendra. And I think that the Spike Drew Angel throuple happening is very exciting. I also
exciting in a couple ways. Am I right or am I right?
And sir, you are right. And I love Buffy spent so much of last episode. And I mean, the last few episodes really kind of feeling like the Slayer barely fits anymore. You know, she, you know, feels really bogged down by this role in this job that she has. And then to have someone come in who does it so differently than her, and how that makes her, you know, feel very territorial, and B, kind of reaffirms to her that it's even Kendra says, it's not a job, it's who you are. You can't run from that. And how that maybe reframes being the Slayer to Buffy. I think that that's so wonderful. Cause I mean, you know, she's barely wanted to do it recently. And then to have someone come in and make her feel oh wait, but this is my job. You can't do this. This is mine. And then, you know, and then in turn to also feel that she's not so cosmically lonely anymore. Mm-hmm. I love this. I really, really, really do. I also not to go down the line and tell you if I like or don't like plots, but I don't know how you feel about Cordelia and Xander. But I kind of love it. I'm having fun. They've been butting heads for 4 episodes straight. And they finally kiss. I was okay, finally. Do you hate it?
I'm poker facing you because I want your honest thoughts.
You know me so well. But I personally, I love a enemies to lovers kind of thing. And I also feel they have worked so hard to establish that these two are straight up sick of each other, and how fighting turns to kissing. You know, I love that. And I think it's fun, and I think I'm excited to see what's going to happen next. And yeah. And I also, it makes me, you know, Kendra, connecting so much with Giles, and how that makes Buffy feel so sad. So yeah, I love this episode. How do you feel about this episode?
Oh yeah, I enjoyed this episode a lot. These two sets of episodes are very before and after for season 2. The reason that it is a two-parter is because it is so monumental. You go into these episodes with Drew being sick. You exit the episodes with Drew bring it full health, and now Spike is sick. We just did an Uno reverse on the two of them. You go into these episodes with most of the Scoobies being single. You exit with Willow and Oz having a flirtation and Cordelia and Xander having kissed. You enter these episodes with Buffy being the only Slayer. You exit these episodes with there being a second Slayer. So much changes, and we kind of reshuffle the entire board in these two episodes, which I think is very exciting. I am so team Xander and Cordelia. Yay! I love their dynamic.
Oh, thank God. I was scared. I was scared.
Xander is obviously a huge perv sicko. And if he had ended up with kind of any other girl, I would be no. Yeah. Gross. Yeah. But he has never, ever even commented on Cordelia being hot. It hasn't been never. If not for her personality, I'd sure like to. No, he literally hates her so much, has made no sexual comment on her ever. Exactly. So she's kind of the only girl that I am pro him getting with.
I 100% agree.
She keeps him honest because she hates him so much and will tell him that he's a loser and an idiot to his face. And then he keeps her honest because he will do the same to her.
These people, and these are two people who need to hear.
Exactly.
They need to be humbled every once in a while. And I'm sure it's also nice to... Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're fine. But Willow and Buffy are way too good for Xander.
Yes.
And Cordelia might also be too good for Xander, but at least
100%.
Yeah. But at least whereas Xander is, you know, pervy and doesn't really like think of the consequences of his actions. He's also balanced with a girl who is just like straight up a mean person.
Yeah. So, and like, she's calling him a pervert. She's like, you're a fucking pervert.
So like their flaws are very complementary, and that they call each other on each other's shit all the time. And I think it's really fun. I like the two of them together a lot.
No, I agree. I agree.
They, some of the funniest moments of this episode, I just like the way they can't stand each other. When they're hiding from Norman Pfister, from the man who makes himself bugs, and Xander says something about how they need to keep hiding, and Cordelia is like, oh yeah, great, so we can just wait for his friends to come and kill us too. Sorry, forgot I was stranded with a loser! Like, the way she screams loser with so much passion. And then after they kiss the first time, and then they're reconciling at school to be like, we need to talk about what happens. And they're like, okay, I don't think we need to like ever address it again. It just like was heat of the moment, whatever, 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 we can forget about it. And then Cordelia goes, and don't try it again. And Xander goes, I didn't try it! Like that. Those two exchanges made me laugh so hard.
I know.
I'm very team. I've always found Cordelia and Xander to be a very fun couple, and I'm glad we're finally at the point that they are, that something's happening there.
No, I so agree. I also feel like I'm seeing the threads of so many plots in this episode, and I hate to shit on my Glee, and you know that's my baby. But that's just not a thing that was happening as frequently. And it definitely happened on Glee, but it was not happening as frequently. And to see all of these threads being planted, like maybe like even episode one of season two.
They have the chemistry of Cordelia and Xander has been amping up more and more. I commented on it a few episodes ago when they yell at the library, and it's like, they, if Willow had not jumped in and told them to shut up, they were about to kiss.
They were. Yeah. And I mean, they also like, Cordelia in some way like saw Xander as someone who like could like care for her, and you know, like he saved her in the fire in
some assembly required.
Yeah, some assembly required, thank you. And like he, like Xander didn't even notice her. And A, I mean, hear me out, as a fellow hot girl.
Don't laugh. Continue.
No, I know. But I am saying, like, this woman is so hot, and this woman is so wonderful, and she can probably have any guy she wants. And to have someone that she, like, in any way has to, like, maybe work a little harder for, and she already feels so strongly. I mean, hate is so close. Like, hate is so close to love. You know what I mean?
The opposite of love isn't hate, it's apathy. And no, she's certainly not apathetic towards Xander.
No, not at all. And I mean, I just think they are such a strong duo to me. I really have, like, I've always thought I liked them. And I also think, like, it's good for Xander to have someone in his life. Yeah. This is a guy who needs someone to be like, no, you're a loser. You're a perv. And also, he has said in this season, and maybe it was a joke, but let's say it's true. He has said that turns him on before.
Oh, I don't think that's a lie.
Right?
I think he's a little into humiliation. No,
hey, and nothing wrong with that. And nothing wrong with that. I love them together. And and it's so funny. And I like to watch them scream in each other's faces. And then like the string of like this orchestral, like, you know, like big chord happening, like this, like orchestra music behind them. Like, it's so funny and so exciting. And I don't know. I just think these two are pretty well matched at this moment.
Yeah. And then them also becoming a crime fighting duo and killing the guy who makes himself bugs together. Like, that was fully a Cordelia and Xander original. They made that plan themselves. They executed it themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad, because I really like them a lot.
Yeah. We also get Oz and Willow matching up this episode.
Yay.
I really... Oz is so funny to me in this episode.
I know, me too.
One, Seth Green, at least in my head, has clearly dyed his hair independently of the TV show. Like, maybe the production wanted him to dye his hair.
I doubt
In my brain, Seth Green just wanted to dye his hair and showed up and was like, sorry, it's brown now. And the way they answer it, which is one episode ago, which was like yesterday.
Yeah.
Hey. He was a redhead. And then he shows up today, dark brown hair. And Willa goes, your hair is brown. Yeah, sometimes. And they just move on.
I think this is also like very teenagery of him. Like, I know so many mm-hmm. redheads who like dyed their hair black in high school and are like, you know, just would do that. And I think this is fun.
Well, and what I love about Oz and why I think Oz and Willow are such a good match is they are both like genius level intellects.
Yeah.
But Willow is so high strung and is so high performing and is so I have to please everyone and do everything that everyone wants me to do. And Oz is like, unfortunately, a genius. Like, he is like, all I want to do is play guitar in my band. And unfortunately, I test really well. And so everyone wants to hire me. Like, I think it's very like he needs a bit of a work ethic. And Willow also needs to calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
But they are both cerebral enough that they speak the same language.
Yeah.
And so I think they are a very good match and balance each other very well.
Oh, what a wonderful thought you've just had.
Thank you.
I so agree. Like, he is unfortunately a genius. And this girl is smart because she works so hard. Like, they probably are, you know, I agree. I think these two are a really great match. What were you going to say?
It wasn't important. You can continue.
I didn't think it was going to be important. I'm kidding.
And I love the scene that we could talk about in more depth. Mm-hmm. But Buffy, you know, she knows the Order of Taraka is after her and they could be anyone. Mm-hmm. And then we find out that one of the Order of Taraka is the woman posing as the cop for career day. That scene is crazy.
Oh.
Just like. Oh.
Also, was she posing as a cop or was she just a cop?
I actually thought the same thing. But
she shot off.
I know. She's like there at the law enforcement booth.
Yeah.
Buffy signs up for law enforcement because that's what the career aptitude assigned her with. Which is why I'm saying ACAB alongside Xander.
Oh, yeah.
But the reason I think that she is posing as a cop is because my belief is the Order of Taraka saw the career aptitude results and were like, we need to station one of ours at the booth that Buffy Summers will be going to.
Sure. If she would have gone to the gardening one, they would have gotten her with, like, shears.
Yes, the gardener, exactly. Mm-hmm. But the escalation of Buffy signs up at the booth, stands back, immediately the cop picks up the clipboard. Okay, when I call your name, say you're here. Buffy Summers, here, whips out a gun.
Gun.
I
sincerely have seen this episode several times, and I literally was like, a gun!
It's crazy.
And not to mention, she is shooting with abandon, like, hurting children.
I almost said Seth Green. Oz gets shot in the shoulder!
I also didn't realize at the time that it was Bruce Seth Green. No, I did not realize it was Oz, and I was like, oh my god, this random kid is just shot. And like, even worse, it's Oz, but I literally was like, oh my god, are they just gonna like shoot a kid and it's gonna be like we're gonna sweep it under the rug? I was gagged.
It was one of those things that watching the episode, I was like, this was definitely shot in 97 because
my god, yeah.
With how bad guns stuff has gotten with gun
now,
control with America. This would not air. Like, this is pre-Columbine. This would not have made it to air now.
No, 100%.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And obviously, like, it is and completely jarring to see this in a television show. And it's like, it's, you know, a lot. And it's exciting because it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But you're so right. Like, there is no way in all hell they could do something like this. Because, I mean, this is happening in America every single day.
The media landscape changed a lot just like 1 year, 2 years later with the Columbine shooting. Because like Scream 3, I know, had to be entirely rewritten because of that. Like, it really changed the media landscape because unfortunately, stuff like this is no longer like crazy fantasy. Can you imagine if this had happened in a school? Like, it now happens almost weekly.
No, absolutely. I know a lot of people are very desensitized to hearing about school shootings. I'm just nervous that we've also swung in a different direction here today in 2025. You know what I mean? Where it's just like so commonplace that it's like not. Do you know? Am I making sense? No.
Are you saying you're worried that we're desensitized to it now?
Yeah.
So I agree with that.
Right. And like, you know, maybe in like 1999, like they couldn't have done something like this, but like maybe in 2025.
They could again?
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying, which I don't know that that's true, but I just feel, no hope in our media landscape sometimes. Yep.
And I agree with what you're saying. And I think once again, when Columbine happened, they rewrote an entire movie. They were pulling episodes that were scheduled to be released from the air. Like people were like, this is such a horrific crime that has happened. Like we cannot do anything that could possibly be construed as enabling this kind of thing. And now it happens so frequently that there's not even always getting national coverage when it happens.
No, exactly.
Now I'm going to shift the conversation back.
Okay, great.
I think it is important to like address all of that. Also, all that to say, the reason I brought it up in the first place is Oz's response to getting shot in the shoulder is so quintessential Oz, and I love it so much. The Oz archetype to me is like, what if someone spoke like they were high all the time, but it's not because they're high. It is because they're operating on such a higher plane intellectually that they just like process things differently.
Oh my God.
Buffy being like, Oz, are you okay? And him going, well, I'm shot, you know? Wow. It's odd.
I know his nonchalance is insane on this television show. Like,
it's
what the hell?
So funny. Oh my gosh. I love it so much.
Oh,
also,
I agree.
Jonathan, who the cop held at knife point. She then, you know, Buffy like best her and she vacates the premises. And then Jonathan goes, was that a demonstration?
Obviously, this scene is like holds a lot, but it is. I feel like, so frankly, I think a lot of scenes in this episode are so chock full.
Yeah.
Of like, you know, they're 3 minutes long, but like 80 things are happening all at once. Like I feel this way about like the last scene when Kendra comes in and they're in like this church and all the fighting that's happening, like Willow staking a vampire, like so many things are happening all at once. And I'm like, wow, I can really tell that like they were doing their big one with this one.
It's a big, these two episodes are like a big set piece. I agree. It was a lot of plot is happening. Marty Knox is on the scene. They said, we got to give her a big one for her first episode.
Marty, I love you.
A lot is happening. Do we talk about Kendra now?
Sure.
All right. The Kendra of it all, everyone. We've talked about this before. It is something we will continue to talk about with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. First and foremost, I like Kendra a lot. I'm very glad that Kendra's on the show. Buffy, as we have mentioned before, is an incredibly white show.
Yeah, 100%.
It is nearly an entirely white cast. Of the 25 people who are credited with writing for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, only one of them is a person of color. Like, it was very white across the board.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of the issues Buffy has with race are present in the character of Kendra.
Yeah.
Once again, we're two white people.
Of course.
So, like, we have a very limited perspective on this. So, we're going to do our best to talk about it. We would love to hear from listeners about their thoughts on it. So, like, obviously, take what we say with a grain of salt.
Of course.
We are speaking for ourselves and no one else and our own perspectives. I genuinely love the character of Kendra. I think it's very interesting to introduce another Slayer who is the opposite of Buffy in the sense that she takes being the Slayer incredibly seriously. She's very by the books. She comes from a culture where, like, being the Slayer is the highest calling you could possibly have. She has been raised into this. It has been her entire life, whereas Buffy is like, this stole my life from me.
Yeah.
I think that that contrast is very interesting and exciting. And I think that having her be from another part of the world makes a lot of sense, as, you know, fighting supernatural is a global issue. The issue is, up until this point, we have not met a single Black character who mm-hmm. was named, except for, like, there was a vampire in one episode yeah. that had a name and then died in the same episode.
Yeah.
But, like, we have not met another Black person really in this show at all.
Yeah.
And so although I like all those aspects of Kendra's character, it also makes her this exotic other. And when we have not, when there is no, like, student that we know at Sunnydale who is part of the group who is Black, yeah. it is very much just reinforcing that Black people are an other to white society. Mm-hmm. Like, the framing of Kendra, of her, like, not understanding any of the culture, the fact that, like, she doesn't even have a last name, that she's always outfitted in this kind of, like, exotic jewelry, mm-hmm. that she is accompanied with more, part of my French, like, exotic and tribal sounding background music.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
Yes. As much as I love the character of Kendra, it's just not helping the fact that she is the only Black character, and I think named character of color, period, mm-hmm. that we have met up to this point. It's yeah. not helping the show's case at all.
No.
And once again, her piss poor accent
yeah.
is also not earning any points in that favor.
Yeah.
Oh, not to mention the Buffy Summers microaggressions that we can get into.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I think
Buffy,
like,
Ann, like, Jesus Christ.
Once again, these are issues that follow the show throughout its run that yes. will come up with other characters. But I do feel like, at least in my opinion, Kendra is kind of like the poster child for Buffy yeah. mishandling characters of color.
Yeah. I so agree. And thank you for saying all of that. I think that's really important to see a television show that has no, A, people of color writing for the show, or also on screen, it just, like, does not reflect the world. And to hear that this woman was cast as Cordelia and mm-hmm. they specifically took that job away from her, this network is doing this on purpose. And I love Kendra. And I think Kendra is, in this episode, obviously it ends so well and she teaches Buffy a really important lesson. And she connects with, you know, Giles in this lovely way, and we learn that this girl is, like, incredibly smart and incredibly dedicated and, like, you know, is learning and, like, has a lesson to teach Buffy. But this is also, like, that's she's a Slayer in her own right. She shouldn't just exist, like, as a lesson for Buffy. It's a lot
to talk about Kendra as a character. I love that she makes Buffy feel unsure of herself, that yeah. it is like, oh, here's, you know,
like, I Giles hate being the Slayer. Yeah.
Like, I hate being the Slayer. I wish someone else could do it. And then yep. suddenly here's someone else who could do it. And now I actually kind of feel territorial yeah. and maybe I like being the Slayer.
Yeah.
And this is like, this is Giles' fantasy of who I was.
Yeah.
A girl who's been training for this her entire life, who literally doesn't speak to boys because she is so uninterested in dating, who doesn't go to school, who doesn't have friends. Her entire life is just conditioning her to do this thing.
Yeah.
I think what that brings out in Buffy's character is really interesting. So yeah. I like all those aspects of Kendra's character.
Yes.
When she is the only character that is not white,
yeah.
it's now all of those things now feel like it's like
yep.
speaking of people of color as a monolith.
Yep.
You know,
of course,
there's a bunch of stuff about Kendra's character that I feel like is problematic that would not be nearly as problematic if there was literally like one other named Black character on the show that we yep. saw a lot.
Yep.
And yeah.
Because now it just looks like that Buffy is racist. Like,
well,
you know.
I mean, I think she is.
Yeah. No, exactly.
Let's not get it twisted.
And I'm glad you said it. And this is so funny too, because like Buffy is, and I mean, at least this is my perspective, because I care so deeply for this girl, and it is so sad to see this. This is a good person. They want us to think that Buffy is a good person, like that she has a sense of truth and justice that is inherent in her bones and her blood. Like, this is like intrinsic to her personhood. And what the fuck is this? Like, she is straight up racist in this episode. And like, you know, obviously she like learns to see Kendra as a human being, but like she straight up does not. And she is speaking to her very unkindly in this episode and like makes insane assumptions about this girl and also is like mimicking her accent back to her, making fun of her. It is disgusting behavior.
Yeah. The whole like Buffy being rude to Kendra, which once again, I feel like it is problematic because there is no other character of color to show like, oh, this is actually a Buffy versus Kendra thing, not like a Buffy versus another race thing.
Yeah.
But that feels, I understand where that's coming from. She feels threatened. Giles obsessed with this girl. Sure. It's making her feel attacked. It is the like mimicking Kendra's accent. No Kiko, no Fido.
No, what the hell?
I'm like, so actually that's insane. No. So actually it's crazy that happened.
No, and I like cannot believe she said
it's
that.
Insane. I think the main issue with this episode.
Yeah.
And once again, this is coming from my perspective. It's the tokenization of it all. It is if you have one singular character that represents this entire group of people, now everything that character says or does becomes, whether intentional or not, a reflection in the audience's eyes of what you think of that entire group.
Yep, totally.
If you have a single gay character, anything that that gay character does or says is going to be how the audience thinks you view the entire gay community. Mm-hmm. And so, whether intentional or not, anything that Kendra does or says and anything that another character does or says to Kendra, in my eyes, is now reflective of how these writers in this entire show feels about the entire Black community, the entire non-white community, because there hasn't really been anyone who isn't white. And so that, I think, is the major issue.
Yeah.
Once again, in my perspective, the tokenization, the fact that she's the only one and she's the only one and she has no friends, has been conditioned to do this single thing. Like the fact that she is the only non-white character and is also written in a way to be an extreme other.
Yeah.
Is a lot. And I think the fact that she is an other from a story perspective works really well.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that the fact that she is an other makes the her and Buffy dynamic really interesting. I just think that they should have taken the time to make the show more diverse going in so that so much of the weight wasn't on Kendra's shoulders when she was introduced. And these things could just be interesting instead of like interesting and also problematic.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. I completely agree.
Talking about the interesting aspect of it.
Yes.
I do. It is fascinating to me. The contrast of Buffy living a regular, her normal life and then surprise, you have this sacred calling. You have to give up your entire life and just kind of like figure it out. And then to find out there is some like, somewhere in the world, there are people who not only know about the Slayer, but like revere it so much that they have found a way to identify who is likely to be called as the Slayer. And they're essentially just trained their entire life for it.
Yeah.
Like that is very exciting to me. It also raises questions of the Watchers Council, like having tabs on who might be Slayers in the future and who is, which I mean, I think is kind of obvious. Like that's how they would have found Buffy is.
Yeah.
They had tabs on her before and then were like, she got activated, so send a watcher after her. I just find that extra layer to the Buffyverse very fascinating.
To learn that Kendra's parents like were so invested in her being potentially a Slayer, like that they would send her away because that was so important to her. It was so important to them and their family. Like, I think that's very interesting. Another aspect of this plot that I do also find very interesting is what we learn about what Giles is keeping from Buffy. So Kendra is an incredibly intelligent young woman, and she has nearly like she has a watcher who like sent her on this mission, but she's also like really self-motivated in the way that she has read all of these volumes of like books, like grimoires or whatever the hell. There's a Slayer handbook that she's read forwards and back. And Buffy is so surprised to learn this. Like, she's like, what the hell? And then to hear Giles say, like, I didn't think that that would be necessarily your speed. And I think that speaks to at least, like an insecurity that I have clocked on Buffy is that she feels kind of stupid and dumb and that she's like not worth anything other than kicking and punching and chopping. And so to learn her closest, nearly her closest parental figure also doesn't even trust her with this information or trust her to teach herself things. That's another thing that like, you know, I think it like cuts Buffy deeply, and to see Giles be so excited to talk about these things that he loves to talk about with this girl who is maybe even doing the job in a way better than her. I think that is interesting.
I'm curious as to clearly like her watcher, Kendra's watcher's very on top of stuff. He's been like training Kendra her whole life.
Yes.
So how does he not know that Buffy's still alive? Because it would be one thing if Kendra showed up and was like, oh, I'm also the Slayer. Like, I got activated when you died and came back to life. But Kendra's also gagged. Kendra's like, how is there another Slayer? You have to be dead. I would think the Watchers Council would be aware that Buffy was still active. It's weird to me that that has not been communicated.
Oh, I know. Let's think about, like, maybe this, and it's so funny to me because obviously there are several Watchers and they can't keep track of one girl at a time.
And also, like, Giles knows Kendra's Watcher.
Yeah.
So how has this information not been passed on?
I have
frankly
several questions.
If the potential I was watching got activated, I'd be telling fucking everyone. I'd be calling
everyone.
All my Watcher friends and I'd say, like, I win.
Guess what?
I win.
Guess what?
Mine got picked. She got activated. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I would be annoying as hell about it.
Oh my God. I would be like posting on Facebook in our Secret Watcher Council Facebook page, like, everyone meet Kendra.
The newest Slayer. Sorry, she's mine.
Rest in peace, Buffy Summers. Thank you for your service. Like, it would
be
a whole thing.
The new Babbage in town, Kendra.
No, absolutely. Like, her favorite color is pink. She loves to read for fun. Like, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And, like, at least the phone tree has got to be activated. Like, these people don't communicate in any way.
Yeah, it's crazy to me.
No, it's so crazy. I just also feel like this is certainly a plot hole. Like, because I personally am like, who's the cleanup crew? There has to be some sort of cleanup crew. Like, Giles, at least, like there's so much property damage and, like, dead bodies all around all the time. Like, who's taking care of this? Buffy? God fucking forbid. Like, I don't. So in my mind, I'm like, the Watchers Council must be like employing some people to like take care of some things. But then it's like, but they can't even keep track of one girl. I don't trust them to.
I just thought of something. The Watchers Council, you know, they do suck. Like, they don't view these girls as humans. They view these girls as cogs in a machine that they can wind up and have them fight. And Buffy, especially as we see in her interactions with Kendra, Buffy is a very atypical Slayer. She is a Slayer who, like, wants to unionize, basically. Like, she wants to have her own life. She wants to do her own shit. I wonder if the Watchers Council knew that Kendra got activated, but then they were like, if Buffy Summers finds out that someone else is slaying, like, that's the only trump card we have with this girl. Is being like, well, if you don't do it, the world's going to end. Well, if you don't do it, the world's going to end. And if we lose that trump card, if there is suddenly someone else who can do it and she knows that, then she's going to stop helping us at all. And it's very convenient to have a Slayer that lives on a Hellmouth.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they intentionally were like,
we
can't let Giles and Buffy know there's another Slayer because then Buffy's going to quit. So we have to keep this a secret from them.
Honestly, that makes a lot of sense.
So Watchers Council was intentionally keeping these two girls from each other because now they got double the labor.
Yeah.
And they don't want these girls to unionize.
They don't.
They said, don't talk about your paychecks.
I mean, Buffy already has, like, to learn that Kendra has given up her life. She has no worldly bonds. She has no friends. She does not, she is not allowed to speak to boys, like, you know, and to see that Buffy not only speaks to boys, she kisses vampires mm-hmm. and, you know, like, has friends and people in her corner in her life. She has unionized. She has employed her friends in Slayer yeah. duties. Like, they are helping her. Like, they're as much a part of this crew as she is. And I, like, to see that that's not only, like, just discouraged, it's against the rules. Like, yeah. Giles is breaking rules to make things better for the way that Buffy operates.
And I'm sure the Watchers... Oh. I'm sure the Watchers fucking hate Buffy. Like, I'm sure they are sure. so annoyed like, with
her. Like, she's such a problem child to them.
Yeah, so then to get a new Slayer who is so dedicated, they're like, okay, win-win.
Yeah.
This is great. My question is, I talked about last week, I was like, Kendra Young and her last name became canonized from that card game. And that is true, but she says specifically yeah. in this episode she does not have a last name.
No,
her parents gave her up so young that she doesn't have a last name. She's just Kendra. So then I'm like, how do they come up with Young? People keep talking about how young she is. I'm like, is that why?
I wonder if that's
they're
it,
like, not the old, they said Kendra Young. She looks so young. She's been playing a teenager for 20 years. Kendra Young. Yeah.
Or maybe she was like, okay, come with me on a thought journey.
Uh-huh.
So she, her parents gave her up. She doesn't have, like, she's not with her parents anymore. I, all this to say, maybe she moves to Utah.
Your headcanon is she goes back to yep. her home country and it tells her watcher, we're moving to Provo.
We're moving to Provo. And then she gets so, like, I don't know. Like, she meets someone. She's like, maybe I'll be a Young as well.
Maybe I'll be a Young. There you go. You want Kendra to be Mormon so bad.
I want everyone to be Mormon so bad. And this is my journey with this podcast is to convert you all. I'm kidding. Please, you can cut that. I mean, you can keep it. I like it. I also really love with Kendra seeing them fight together. Like
yes.
this in the, like, my eyes were like brimming with tears. It was so thrilling to see. And, you know, like this girl, like Buffy, has felt so cosmically lonely. Like, and obviously, like, she has all of her friends with her and she's got their support. She's got Giles' support. Like, she is probably the most supported Slayer who's ever been, probably. Mm-hmm. And it still is an incredibly lonely existence. And to see these two fight together, right next to each other, I'm sure it, like, felt so good to have someone's back in this way and then have them have your back in the way that only a Slayer can be. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most wonderful parts of this episode. Like, and then also, you know, to jump to the end of this, Kendra is incredibly wary of Angel. Obviously, like, she is by the book. She is here to slay vampires.
He should be killed. He's a vampire.
Yep, in her own words, he should be killed. He's a vampire. And, you know, and she really doesn't understand why Buffy would, you know, put her life on the line, put her friend's life on the line to, she doesn't care about Drew getting to full power. She wants Angel back. Mm-hmm. And Kendra's like, no, like that should not be the thing that you're so focused on. And while I don't think that Kendra fully understands where Buffy is coming from by the end of the episode, and I don't think that she would. I don't know that, you know, of course I don't think she would, but she does kind of see that Buffy is very different, like, is living just a different life than she is. Like, she's not being held to the same standards. And also, like, anyway, but to, like, have Kendra come help Buffy get him out of the rubble of this, like, crumbling church, you know, to not just, you know, be apathetic to if Angel lives or dies, to, like, help Buffy save him. I thought was really lovely. This girl is a wonderful person. And then also to in the end be like, okay, well, I don't really get it, but you know, he is really cute. I thought that was fun.
The Kendra and Buffy relationship feels like a sister dynamic to me.
Yes.
They clash a lot. They do not see eye to eye, but at the end of the day, they have a shared experience that no one else understands quite like they do. And I agree. I think it's really special to see them be there for each other like only Slayer can, like you said. And then the end of the episode when they kind of part ways, it is not necessarily like, oh my gosh, I totally get you and you're super cool, but they have this mutual respect. They have rubbed off on each other. They mm-hmm. have learned from each other. And then I love that final line that I think Kendra has where she says, you're not alone. Or like, neither of us is alone. I don't remember. I don't know why I didn't write it down. But she says something along the lines of like, neither of us is alone anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special.
I agree.
Overall, I like the dynamic. I like the relationship. I already talked about my issues with it. And there are plenty of issues to be had with it. But I think it's really special to have this other person that Buffy knows. This other person that knows what Buffy is going through, that like shares the mantle with her, that can relate to her. Yep. And I also think it is, I don't know, to keep with the intrigue of the show, I think it is also important that Kendra is not in Sunnydale all the time, because we mm-hmm. do still need the main conflict of like, but yeah. so much is on our main character's shoulders.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I like
and
it.
And I'm sure there's like, you know, vampires to be slayed wherever that Kendra ends up. Yeah.
There's a Hellmouth in Cleveland.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
Hell yeah. What else do we have to say about this episode? Let's think.
Well, I know we talked about it at the top of the app, but just the challengers of it all was just so exciting to me.
Thruple.
I really, you know, to see their dynamic again, because we know that Angel, you know, sired Drew and is like a big reason for the way that Drew is the way she is, to like watch her enact kind of like sexy revenge on him and to like say all the people that he has like killed of hers. Like, she's like, I don't have an uncle anymore. You
when
ate him.
She says, say uncle. Just kidding. You killed my uncle. I was like, okay, comedy queen.
No,
wait a
I
second.
Know. No, I was living. I really was having fun. And also like, you know, we know that Angel feels a lot of guilt for the way that he has treated this girl and the way that he treated her family by killing them. Say uncle. Just kidding. You killed mine. I think this is awesome. I think it's what he deserves. He needs to be punished.
I love the fact that Drew, or at least I find the fact very interesting, that Drew, in our previous Drew and Angel interactions, she spoke of Angelus with like such reverence.
Yes.
And that she thought he was so cool and she misses him and is my boy all gone away now. Mm-hmm. And then in this episode, she does talk with anger about the fact that he killed her family. Yeah. The fact that she holds both of those emotions is very intriguing to me.
I agree.
Like, she both is so in awe of the fact that he was able to enact this evil and mm-hmm. like really admires it, but then also still holds a pain and resentment yeah. of, but you enacted that evil on me specifically.
And she also holds that they had an intense relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, I think all of three of those things are holding hands in this scene. And like, you know, she admires him. She also like wants him and she hates him. And I am thrilled to watch it. Like, it is yeah. like incredibly interesting. And not to mention, she's got like her main thing that we know about her is that she was very powerful. She's got this boyfriend who is incredibly devoted, who is also somehow involved in this. And like how Angel being here fucks up the dynamic that we're seeing. Like, it is very, very, very interesting to me.
I agree. I think it is a bit of a cheap way out to be like the ritual worked and Drew is now powerful, but oh no, Spike is now sick. I was like, girl, we've been doing this. Like, why are we switching? But I mean,
yeah,
they have a longer arc planned. They can't have like a big climactic something happen this early in the season. I understand.
Yeah.
But it just is, that's a little eye-rolly to me, but oh well.
Sure.
In that final fight scene, it did make me laugh. They're in that church. They're doing the ritual. Buffy and Kendra are there fighting. One, Kendra does so many back handsprings to enter that church for no fucking reason. Girl, just run. It'd be faster. Oh. Like, there's no
point. She's trying
point.
To assert dominance.
There's
gymnastic
no point
dominance.
To those. Okay. And then also, this just made me giggle. The fact that Buffy, like, takes down Spike, makes him fall over by swinging. I looked it up. The thurible, I think, is what it's called. The little, like, incense thing that they have at Mass. The fact that, like, that specifically, she picks it up and, like, swings it like it's a lasso and then throws
it. It bonks him in the back of the head.
That made me
and
laugh.
And then he brings down a whole wall.
Yes. Yes. And also, as we mentioned earlier, Cordy and Xander kill the man who can make himself bugs together. And how they kill him is they put glue on the ground. They trick him into becoming bugs. The bugs get stuck on the glue and they stomp on him. And there is a fight scene where the camera keeps cutting between Buffy and Kendra, like doing gymnastics, punching and killing vampires. Then cut to Cordy and Xander just stomping on the ground and screaming, then cutting back to the gymnastics. And that made me giggle. That was very funny.
No, I agree. I so agree. It is so exciting. Because it's also like, I mean, this man is bugs, like, and they're treating him like killing bugs, like they're scared and they're like being silly, and then these two incredibly capable young women like kicking hella ass. It is so funny. Oh my god, I love that scene so much.
All right, you have big final thoughts on What's My Line Part 2?
Big final thoughts.
I love when they've just established, okay, here's what happened. Buffy died for a bit and Kendra's gagged. She's like, you died. And Buffy says, just for a minute. And then Kendra says something about, we can go back to your watcher and get our orders. And Buffy says, I don't take orders. I do things my way. And Kendra goes, no wonder you died.
No, seriously.
That was a gag. I loved that.
No wonder you died. Oh my gosh. Oh, I feel like I spent a lot of time talking about Willie or whatever the hell his name was last week. And to watch him be a sleazeball to these young girls, I hated it. I was like, aw, damn.
He skeezes up the young girls. He asks if he can take pictures of them nude. Hated that.
Yeah, hated that.
Xander hoses down Cordelia to get the maggots off and then keeps hosing her down. Hated that.
No,
which also,
I
was like, up until this point, what I liked about Xander and Cordy is that he was like never attracted to her openly ever. And now he's skeezing on her as well. And what was the third thing? There was a third thing that I was like, this really bothered me and I haven't mentioned it yet. Oh, I'm just like tired of every girl who doesn't attend Sunnydale High being horny for Xander. And it made a little more like Kendra can't bring herself to like talk to Xander.
Oh, yeah.
It made more sense when she revealed that she's not allowed to talk to boys, period, because like no romantic anything can happen. And I was like, okay, that it's less a Xander thing and more just like a boy my age thing. So I was more forgiving of it then.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you want us so badly to believe this guy's a loser. And then every time a girl who doesn't attend his high school shows up, she wants to kiss him immediately.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's the Will Schuster effect.
It is. And it's also like, you know, I think we've said this before, like Nicholas Brennan is handsome.
Yeah.
He is handsome. And maybe this speaks to like, he's so fucking annoying that the girls in Sunnydale are like, they cannot be charmed by him. They're like, oh no, he's so fucking annoying. Like, maybe that's what it is, but it's also like, oh my God, I hated to see him do that to Cordy. Cause it's like, he like I think this works better when he does not notice her like this.
I agree.
And to like not only it, while she is like straight up in danger, like sexualize her and like, you know, at the very worst, like, you know. Like, why was he doing that? Why was he doing that? Stop.
Yeah, it was annoying.
No, so annoying.
Well, I think those are all my thoughts.
I think those are all mine too. All right.
Oh, yeah. Kill count this episode. I remembered for once. Can you believe?
I can.
So all of the kills are in that church fight scene. The first one, a vampire gets crossbowed by Rupert Giles. Second one, the man who can make himself bugs, nay, Norman Pfister, he gets stomped on by Cordy and Xander. Is that how you say? Is it nay or is it knee? Write and let us know. You know, N-E-E with the accent over the second E, where it'll be like this person's name and like knee, what they used to be called. They do it a lot for like maiden names. I don't know if it's nay or knee. I'm going with nay.
Okay.
Willow sticks a vampire during that battle. And then are we counting this one? The cop lady is like on the ground at the end, but it's not specified if she's dead or not. But then also the church is starting to burn.
No.
Not counting it? I'm fine to not count it. Okay, yeah, so that's
I feel called to not count it.
You feel called, and who am I to deny your calling? Okay, that's three kills. I'll add that to the list. List needs to be updated for last week, but I'll do that later. I'll just do all this later. Okay, great. Worst part, best part. Lena, what was your worst part of this episode?
I think that there's something systemically wrong happening here, but I'm going to say our hero, Buffy Summers, I hold her dearly in my heart. This girl is my literal hero. Like, genuinely, I feel very, very, very deeply for her. I feel like I have modeled a lot of my personality, like from the time I was very young, to be like this girl. It is important to me to be a slayer in my day-to-day life. Like in my office job, I feel empowered by this television show and especially by this young girl who I see a lot of myself in. And of course, she can have flaws. That is fine. But I think she can have flaws. I draw the line at racism. I think to have this girl, this show is named Buffy the Vampire Slayer. There are no characters of color in the show for her to act positively towards. So we have to assume that Buffy Summers is acting in a racist fashion and, you know, at worst is racist. Like, it is incredibly like difficult to watch her do that because I do care so deeply about her. And then it's like, what the fuck? You guys want us to love her so much? I'm doing what this show wants me to do. And by loving her and then watching her do this, I'm like, okay, well, what the hell? Like, I do not feel comfortable. Like, if this was a real person, I'd be like, well, we can't, what? You know what I mean? And obviously this is like, you know, she is fake. This is a complicated situation. Like, you know, this is a complicated world that we live in, you know, but why are they doing that? Why are they doing that? And if it was just like you said, a rivalry thing, like this is the new girl in town. I feel jealousy. I feel rival. Like this is my rival. It would be different. And if, you know, anyway, I'm just repeating 10 things over and over and over, but all this to say that is my worst part. And I dare I say it's one of my worst parts so far. It is not appropriate and it makes me sick and I don't like it. Like that's my girl. Like I do not want that to happen on my television show. I feel nearly betrayed by it, you know?
Yeah.
What's your worst part?
My worst part is the othering of Kendra. I just think it's, it is pretty universally agreed on that the fatal flaw of Buffy is how white the show is.
Yes, 100%.
And for them to have their first multi-episode named character of color and have her be so, like, such an other, so different, so not a part of the norm, so, like, cannot gel in society, very us versus them. I think is a bad look, even though she's ultimately a positive character and ultimately Buffy does learn from her. I still think it is a messy and bad look, and it's just reinforcing the norm is us white people and anything else is other and strange.
Yeah.
Even if it's like good, it's still other and strange. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
Oh my God, that's you're so right. You're so right.
What is your best part?
My best part is probably in the end, Kendra and Buffy fighting together and how that, you know, Buffy has been feeling so alone and then realizes that she's not and realizes that she, you know, has support in this girl. Like I think that especially them like fighting tag team is like incredibly exciting to see. And I think is like heartwarming to behold. Yeah. What's your best part?
My best part is the loophole that Buffy dying and Prophecy Girl called a new Slayer.
Oh, literally, no, that's awesome.
One of my most prominent memories of this show was how gagged I was at that reveal.
Yeah.
I think that is genius storytelling. I think that is so exciting. And the ways in which the show is both able to keep Buffy having the weight of the world on her shoulders and feeling like she has a lot of responsibility, but then also it's now able to hold the mirror up to her by having another Slayer somewhere out there, I think is extremely exciting. It's frankly one of my favorite plot choices on this entire show is the fact that another Slayer gets called and there are now two Slayers out in the world. I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a gayest part jingle?
Yes, I do. What is the gayest part of the episode to you?
Wow, it's really beautiful.
That was not my fave, but no, what's your gayest part of this episode?
I have literally no idea. The thing is, like, I would say the challengers of it all, but like, I also think it's really straight for two guys to be like, oh, well, I used to kiss your girlfriend. Oh, you used to kiss my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as I want there to be sexual tension between Angel and Spike in that scene, in my eyes, there's not
Sure. I sure want there to be.
I want there to be, too. I think Angel, like, tied up and shirtless is pretty gay, though. So maybe I'll just go with that.
And that's what I was going to say. I say a man tied up shirtless. Yeah. That's pretty gay.
Yeah, that's pretty gay.
I so agree. I also think, and I always say this, I think a dominant woman is very gay.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Dominic Strucella, come on.
Oh, come on.
Yo.
Hey. I agree. Hey. Damn. That was what's my line part one and part two?
That big turning point in the season, in the series. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
If Drew's you have strong thoughts, now.
Drew's strong now. Spike's weak now. Uno reverse.
Uno
if you
reverse.
Have thoughts,
but she was
send them
carrying
to us.
Him. I love that part.
If you thought, send them to us at recoveringgleek@gmail.com.
It's email time. It's time for emails. Email time.
That was, Lena, look me in the eyes. That was amazing.
Thank you.
That was stunning.
Get
that
this.
That was gorgeous.
I wrote it just for you.
What? You're joking.
No, I'm not. That's how much I love you. I wanted to write you a little song because I know how much you love email time.
I truly, it means the world to me. And I feel so seen in this moment. I feel so known for you to recognize that I love email time. And for you to commemorate that love with a song is truly one of the grandest gifts I've ever been given in my entire life.
You're welcome. I love you.
I love you too.
Should we commemorate this moment? That we commemorated a moment with the email.
I would love nothing more in this entire world than to commemorate the commemoration.
I've got a really special one for you today.
Okay, lay it on me.
Okay, this one is from friend of the podcast, Drew, our forever fan.
Let's bring Drew in here. Here we go. Hi, Alina and Ian. I hope you both had an amazing Halloween. I wanted to reach out on a topic that me and my friends were discussing over the Halloween holiday. Are vampires still scary? Dracula and vampires were originally some of the scariest monsters. However, I feel in today's media, they are now generally the opposite. vampires have turned into sex symbols. Instead of vampires being the villains, they are now the hero slash protagonist. Dressing up as vampires during Halloween has now even leaned toward the Collins rather than the Nosferatus. When did things switch? I think there is a good argument that Buffy played a huge role in the rebranding of vampires. Angel being portrayed as a vampire trying to redeem his life presents a new way of thinking for a classic monster. He humanizes the stereotype. As a creature who is not supposed to have a soul, we see him care very much about Buffy and the Scoobies. He even shows remorse over Drew and what he did to her. Almost all modern media now shows vampires on both sides of the equation. Yes, vampires are deadly predators, but that can also be overcome with a strong enough will and moral compass. Is this showing that there is life after death? Curious about your thoughts. Your forever fan, Drew. P.S. Enlighten me, if Ford would have come to Buffy pitching the idea of saving his life by going vampire, would she be supportive knowing Angel proves vampires could be good? I don't think she would be supportive.
I don't think so either. I think that she thinks that Angel is an exception to a rule. Mm-hmm. And she knows that Angel has a soul. So
she could be like, Angel, Ford, you got any information on that curse?
Yeah. She knows Ford wouldn't have one. Like, Angel has like very specific circumstances that make him good. I think overall she sees vampires as demons that need to be slayed. And Angel is just a very specific circumstance.
I agree. I am curious as like, if she were to get her hands on that curse, would it then just be like, this is the path to eternal life? Exactly. Yeah. Like, turn them and immediately put the curse on them before they kill anyone. They have no remorse. They've committed no sin.
But
they're
then
just themselves
like they're
forever.
Starving forever.
Girl, they can go to the Meals on Wheels with Angel. Go to the blood drive.
Yeah, but he still has to steal. I'm sure he feels bad about it. He feels remorse.
I'm saying
I don't think it's a perfect fix. I think Buffy still has a job.
I think immortality as a whole is a curse, and there's 10,000 pieces of media about this exact thing.
No, I agree.
Yeah. So I'm leaning towards no on that.
Yeah. I feel pretty clear personally, but I don't know. Especially like I think especially if Ford doesn't have any access to any soul giving back
any
materials,
curses.
Yeah, any curses, yeah. Like there's no hope for him. And like, you know, she also, it's Ford proves to her that he's not, I don't know, like, especially with him being like, there's no other choice. Like, he's not thinking clearly, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the full picture at all.
I think the question posited is like, if he came up, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to kill all these kids and get the, if it was just like, hey,
yeah,
you're dating a vampire.
Yeah.
I have terminal cancer. Could he bite me and turn me into a vampire and then I could just live?
I don't know. I feel pretty clearly that no, but maybe other people feel differently.
I mean, I think it would be interesting for her to say no and then him to be like, okay, hypocrite city, like you're dating a guy who is.
Which, I mean,
scenario.
Hello, I do think that's true. I think it's also hypocrite city.
Yeah.
I went to hypocrite city and everyone said they knew
and
Buffy.
Everyone knew Buffy Summers.
Hello. Okay. And for your question, when did vampires stop being scary?
I really like this.
I like this too. And I agree. I think Angel was probably, especially for like our generation and our parents' generation, you know, like even like Anne Rice, you know,
yes.
In the 80s, 90s. Like, I think like they've been the subject of a lot of, you know, pieces of media. And obviously, I mean, I wasn't consuming media in the 70s, so I don't know. But what do you think?
So obviously, like, we weren't around, but I do think there was a turn in the 80s, 90s. I think the Anne Rice of it all. I think, well, funnily enough, I don't know. Because I think about like the Munsters, and the Munsters has like Grandpa Dracula, who's just like, hey, you kids. So like, but the Munsters, you know, was doing that with every kind of monster. But then we still have like the Dracula movie in the 70s that is scary. But I think the big turning point is Interview with the Vampire. And then that also is inspiring Buffy. And then Buffy I kind of feel like is inspiring Twilight. And yeah. I feel like those three pieces of media are pivotal in showing vampires who have remorse, who have a conscience, and who we root for.
Yeah. And then we get Michael B. Jordan.
In Sinners.
As Stack.
Of course. Of course. And I do, you make such an interesting point, Drew, that it's like vampires nowadays can still be scary, but every piece of vampire media now has a character that it's like, but we empathize with this one. To show, like, instead of just a vampire is explicitly evil, it's like, now the story of a vampire is a story of severe temptation, and there's always, like, someone fighting against the temptation and trying to overcome the temptation. Which I feel like in old vampire media, it was always, we were relating to the victim, and the vampire himself was the temptation. It was like, do I succumb to this person who is like very enticing, who is very wealthy, who is very powerful? And in modern vampire media, it is, we are sympathizing with the vampire, and the temptation is murder, and like, will he succumb to that? So our POV character has shifted.
Yeah, definitely. I also feel, though, monster fuckers have always been out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I do think that there has always been people watching Nosferatu in the 30s or 40s or whatever that came out and being like, I tap that. And I love that.
Hey, and you know, I think you're not wrong. I think you're not wrong.
I know I'm not wrong, but I do agree. I think that especially, I like what you said about like perspective shift, you know, because we're definitely empathizing more with vampires in media, I think, in movies that I'm seeing now.
And I think to piggyback off of what you said, Buffy and Twilight just said what everyone was afraid to say, which is like, I want to fuck a vampire. But it was like, don't worry, he's a nice one. Like, don't worry, he's a nice one.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. Like, from the dawn of vampire mythology, there's been someone who's like, but I tap that. Buffy and Twilight
Bella.
Just... Yes, but I'm talking about Twilight as a medium, as a piece of media. They finally make it palatable for the mainstream audience to be like, okay, he's not like gross and a murderer. Like he's like a soft boy and he feels bad.
They're vegetarians.
And so now all of the closeted monster fuckers can now proudly say, oh, I want to tap
God.
That with their whole chest.
Yeah.
And once you open that box, you can't close that box.
No, you really can't. You really can't. And I mean,
you can't unring that bell.
No.
And the monster fuckers are out.
Fangs are boners confirmed. And that's just the truth, mama.
Yeah. But I really like this.
I know, it's a good thought.
And I do, I also think part of it is more of an interest, at least movie-wise, more of an interest in gray stories. Because I feel like old Hollywood movies, there was like, this is, and a lot of this had to do with, you know, like the Hays Code and censorship, and like movies have to show, you know, proper morals and that like the villainy is punished. But like old movies, it was like, this person is bad and this person is good. And we are rooting for a good person and we are against bad person. And then as media has moved forward, we have wanted more stories about more complicated characters.
Yeah, 100%.
And so we are now more enticed by a story of someone who is fighting against a great evil within themselves, as opposed to someone who is fighting against an external great evil.
I love that.
Oh, I also want to shout out Lost Boys. I think Lost Boys is big for monster fuckers.
Oh. Thank God you said it. Thank God you said it. Oh, my God, that movie wrecked me. I think this is a separate thought, but I do think, I saw a video the other day that was like, all these huge vampire movies are huge recession indicators. Like Twilight came out like just before the 2008 crash. Like there was one like in the 30s. Sinners just came out recently. Like, I don't know. That's a separate thought, but it just gets me thinking about like vampires in our world and how we view them and stuff. I don't know.
What do you think that says about how we view them?
That times are fucking tough. And I'm so hungry I could eat blood. I don't know. I have no idea. I really don't. But I'm sure it says something about something.
I mean, the concept of like a bloodsucker.
That's capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, oh, a rich person sucking off of everyone else.
I mean, definitely.
I don't know.
I don't know. Hey, I'm no vampire scholar, but maybe I should become one. Maybe we should become some.
Well, interesting thought experiment. How was your Halloween?
My Halloween was so good. Thank you for asking. We just did a house party because my favorite club is closing because they wouldn't unionize. Hate that, but that's on them. So we did a house party. We watched Twilight. We played One Night Werewolf.
Heck yeah,
I dressed like a vampire because I do want to fuck a vampire and I want to be one. I don't want to be one. Just in a sexy way, though. Not in a real life way, obviously. But yeah, I had a lot of fun. And then, yeah, that's what I did. How was your Halloween?
My Halloween was good. It was really fun.
Good.
Yeah. I saw a friend that I hadn't seen in a few months. I went to a Halloween party of hers. I rode the MTA alone, dressed as sexy Slimer. And people kept saying, oh, you're Jim Carrey as the mask. And I said, no.
No.
I'm Slimer from Ghostbusters, Philistines.
My shirt says Slimer.
And then I went to the Halloween party at my friend's house, and this girl I didn't know was getting chips next to me. And I went, you're Emma Stone on Easy A. And she went, oh my gosh, you got my costume. And I said, yes. And then she said, and you're Slimer from Ghostbusters. And I was like, wait, are we psychically linked? It's like, is this cosmic? Holy cow.
That's so fun. Do people not recognize that she's Emma Stone in Easy A? I assume she's wearing
I was kind of gagged that she had the red A and everything. I was pretty shocked that people didn't get it.
Do people not love that movie? What the hell?
I mean, I don't really love that movie.
What the hell?
But I recognize the costume when I see it.
Come on.
Anyways, glad that you had a good Halloween.
Whoa, for an Emma Stone lover such as yourself, that is intensely surprising to hear. I did have a nice Halloween.
There's some things about it. Anyways, glad you had a nice Halloween.
Yeah.
I love Halloween.
Me too.
And now, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everyone.
Hey!
If you want to send us an email, send it to recoveringgleek@gmail.com.
Thanks for being here. Back to your regularly scheduled programming. If you want to follow us on social media, you can. We're at recoveringgleek_podcast on TikTok and also Instagram.
RG Presents.
What the hell did I say?
You said Recovering Gleek.
No, RG Presents _podcast on TikTok and Instagram. Thank you.
And you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/recoveringgleek. Hear bonus episodes. Hear my thoughts on The Descent from our pre-show of this episode. We have pre-shows for every episode. You can do that at patreon.com/recoveringgleek. You also get a little shout out at the end of the episode, which Lena is going to do.
And here I go, because I love my patrons. Oh my gosh, it's my favorite time of the episode. Shouting out the patrons. I love you, patrons. Seriously, thank you all. Your support does not go unnoticed to us. We genuinely could not do it without you. So here is a big Patreon shout out to Natalie, Skyla, Celia, Vanessa, Emily, Sonia, Aaron, Olivia, Morgs, Ida, Jack, Karis, Elizabeth, Depressed Bubbles, Eden, Brianna, JP, Tanya, Catherine, Shannon, Rachel, Drew, Christine, Kristen, Kayleen, Rachel, Allison, Megan, Audrey, Alexandra, Kylie, Dustin, Azza, Jaden, Paul, Julia, Keely, Jasmine, Will, Danica, Shalane, Diagonal Toast, Kay, Reagan, Pee Pee Poo Poo, Josette, Joe, Lo, Madeline, Alani, Elise, Blanton, Alice, Paige, Nadia, Nicole, Abby, Kristen, Story, Eileen, Mallory, Hamantha, Rebecca, Layla, Ari, Marissa, Taylor, Frankie, Margaret, Despina, Emily, Phoebe, Aria, Eva, Haley, Emily, Jacqueline, Elsie, Laszlo, Ray, Emma, Steph, Charlie, Kelsey, Thomas, Chucho, Brittany, Kenzie, Michael, Katie, Elizabeth, Freddie. Thank you all. Love you guys so much. Bye bye.
And we'll see you here next week for Ted. Can you believe?
No.
Wow.
Yeah. It's going by so fast.
Well, thank y'all for joining us. Thanks for listening. Keep slaying and go have a kinky fight torture three-way.
Yeah.
In celebration of Drew, Spike, and Angel.
Oh my God, I know I will. Here is a kiss on your forehead if you accept it.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Follow us at recoveringgleek_podcast. Email us at recoveringgleek@gmail.com. Join our Patreon, patreon.com/recoveringgleek. Rate and review us and tell your friends, please.
Something I forgot to mention that made me giggle in this episode is when Cordy and Xander first get to the library and meet Kendra. And they're like, Xander's like, who's this? And Buffy says, oh, this gives a whole explanation of like, this is Kendra. She's another Slayer. Apparently there's a loophole. Like when I died, another Slayer was called. And then Cordy just goes, hi, nice to meet you. Doesn't even look at her, just blows past and keeps walking. Like, yeah. Could not be less interested in this development. She just kisses Xander Harris. She's got bigger fish to fry.
And she also barely cares about Buffy. I do not think she cares about Kendra.
I loved that moment. I thought it was hysterical.